A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Must Hear Music podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. I'm here with Andrew Unterberger.
What's up, Joe?
Hey. So we have another memorial podcast ahead of us. Done two of these in the past. We did David Bowie and Prince, and now we have lost another rock legend, Tom Petty. Unexpectedly, I mean, there was the bizarre, there was a bizarre, you know, like 24-hour period where it was like, was he, wasn't he dead?
Yeah, and his daughter came out and decried those who declared him dead on Instagram.
Yeah, let's not comment on that. emotions were high.
Yes, indeed.
But yeah, so anyways, so, you know, we're going to take a kind of a departure from the usual must-hear thing where we talk about new songs, and we're just kind of do a little more personalized slash billboardy history on Mr. Tom Petty.
Mr. Tom Petty.
So, personally, the last two we did, Prince and David Bowie, are some of my, like, they're both in my, like, top five of all time. I'd say, you know, Tom Petty, certainly not top five for me. How's that for a wonderful way to start
yeah,
a memorial podcast?
A touching tribute. Tom Petty, not top five, yeah.
Not top five. No, but I love Tom Petty, and I think he's just one of the most interesting musicians. I feel like he appeals to people just across so many different musical spectrums, and with different types of tastes, more so than almost any other musician I can think of. Like, I would say top 10 of, like, beloved by everyone musicians. Like, he falls into that category.
Yeah, I mean, you say he's not in your top five. He's not in my top five either. I think he's just generally not really, like, a top five kind of guy. And actually, like, I think you look at the Hot 100. I don't think he ever had a top five hit on his own. He had the one with Stevie Nicks, which wasn't really even his song. But that's sort of Tom Petty. Like, he wasn't the kind of guy that you really build your entire lifestyle around. Like, he wasn't that kind of Bruce Springsteen hero worship type figure.
Yeah.
But if he's not in anybody's top five, he's also not in anybody's top 50, probably.
Right.
Or, you know, like, he's the kind of guy that, you know, you don't even necessarily realize what an appreciation you have for him until something like this happens. And you kind of look over all the albums and all the song titles, and you're just kind of blown away by, you know, how many great hits he had, how many memories you have associated with him, just what kind of a place he had in the culture, kind of unassumingly.
I think that's a very good way of putting it. And for me, it's also just a personal connection. You know, I grew up, my parents were, especially my mom, big Tom Petty fans, and between the greatest hits, but particularly Full Moon Fever, his first solo album, and then the first Traveling Wilburys album, which is blessedly kind of back in the public view. There was a guy.
It wasn't on Spotify for a really long time.
It wasn't on Spotify, it was released on CD back in the day, but then it wasn't reissued. There was a good, I feel like most of my life, like, the Traveling Wilburys were kind of like a hard to find thing.
Yeah, sort of a lost classic.
Yeah, thank God they're back out there now. That first one, if you're not familiar, it's like the supergroup to end all supergroups. It's Tom Petty, George Harrison, Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, and Jeff Lynne. Roy Orbison died before. They did a second album, which wasn't as good. Roy Orbison died.
Yeah, I didn't even realize just how close, like, because I was reading the Spin re-promoted their Tom Petty profile from 1989, and Roy Orbison was already dead at that point. I totally forgot how soon it was after recording that first LP.
The Traveling Wilburys album, it's called, I think, just Traveling Wilburys Volume 1.
Yeah.
It definitely sonically is much more of a, I would say, a Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne affair than any of the other players. The lead song, without getting too much on talking about other people, the lead song, Handle With Care, is very much a George Harrison song, and there's one song that sounds very Dylan, but to me, the whole album is basically just, like, Tom Petty and Jeff Lynne taking these rock heroes they grew up loving and kind of like giving them some material to work with.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get more into this later, but this was kind of the Tom Petty and Jeff Lynne era, you know, mm-hmm. they go on to work together on Full Moon Fever and Into the Great Wide Open, and they kind of take Tom Petty's career to new commercial heights in the process.
Yes. But what's your personal connection?
Andrew? Yeah, well, you know, Sam, I mean, I think the Greatest Hits was the way in for a lot of people kind of our age, and that, like, it's the sort of thing that, I don't know, my parents certainly owned it too. It was, you know, got played on car road trips. You know, I know the whole thing. I couldn't even remember actually one time like listening to it on my own, like putting it in the cassette and hitting play, but I must have heard it dozens, who even knows how many times. My first ever rock concert was a Tom Petty concert.
Really?
Also the first time I ever smelled marijuana, and I got lightheaded and had to be taken outside. Not sure as an 8-year-old it was necessarily the best environment, but I was grateful.
Wait, the first time you smelled marijuana?
Yes.
Okay, not the first time you smoked marijuana.
No, I guess it was the first time I got like a contact high from it, I guess.
But, wow, that's funny.
Too young to really understand what was going on there.
But, were you kind of like, marijuana, heavens no, and kind of fainted in front of everyone?
It had not the greatest effect on the show at the time, not if I had, you know, tried it recreationally a couple decades later, but in any event, pretty good into the world of rock concerts.
Yeah.
And I saw him again, I guess, like, you know, some 20 years after that.
Were you at the Bonnaroo show?
No,
by chance,
saw him, I believe, at the PNC Bank Arts Center, just a New Jersey amphitheater. It was a perfectly reasonable setting for a Tom Petty
show,
I would say. Still played the hits, still sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I saw him twice, and both times it was just like a perfect, like, perfect craftsmanship, perfect showman.
Sure.
You know, exactly. Just, I kind of, almost like just like workmanlike, you know, like show up, deliver the hits, make them sound like you remember on the albums or on the radio.
Yep.
You know, limited new stuff, but the new stuff is, you know, nicely sprinkled throughout, so it doesn't, you know, not too many of the bathroom / grab a beer breaks.
And when the concert was over, the last time I saw him, like, there were a bunch of songs that he left on the table. And you're kind of upset about it until you think and realize, like, he just doesn't really, he's not going to play for 4 hours. And if he doesn't play for 4 hours, then he's going to leave hits on the table because he got so many of them.
And it's true. He played, like, 3 hours. And like you said, there's too much stuff to cover.
Still the ones you miss out on.
We'll talk about some of this stuff. So he has a very long, pretty prolific, you know, for a guy who... before I delve off another tangent. So yeah, there's Tom Petty solo, three solo albums, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, just a truckload of albums from those guys.
Sure.
Two Traveling Wilburys albums and then two Mudcrutch records. So Mudcrutch was the band he dropped out of high school to focus on. They weren't really going anywhere, so they broke up in the 70s. He took a couple of those guys, and they formed Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. But then,
did you ever listen to those Mudcrutch albums?
I did. Yeah, being the generous man that he was, about 10 years ago, he kind of... Because I think Mudcrutch was... There was maybe one or two people who didn't go under the Heartbreakers, so who didn't, you know, kind of experience just a lifetime of success, basically. he got back together with them, and they released a couple albums. I only listened to the first one, which was... 2008, self-titled, and it was, I mean,
yeah,
honestly,
what does it sound like? I really don't know that much about
it. Sounds like a Tom Petty record.
Okay.
I would say it sounds like a slightly harder rocking Tom Petty album.
But he was right to leave those losers in the dust, is basically what you're saying.
100%. No, it was, you know, it was, I would, one thing I would say is that it was a very, and I guess forewarning, we're going to be jumping around a lot. This will not be a chronological retelling of Tom Petty's life and catalog, but he was good at kind of, for someone who didn't have the largest sonic palette, like, he was good at mixing things up.
Mm-hmm.
And Mudcrutch, you know, for someone who, like, by 2008 was kind of, you'd be like, oh, what's a new Tom Petty possibly going to hear? Like, he, you know, that was a smart move, I think, to be like, all right, well, now I'm going to start a new band. And by new band, I mean a band that existed 30 years ago. And it kind of is like a throwback to a little bit of that kind of like bar band 70s Heartland rock thing.
Mm-hmm.
A little more straightforward, a little harder edged. But the second Mudcrutch album is technically his last album now. It's just called Two, and that came out last year. So that is his swan song, really.
Yeah, I'll have to delve back into that one. Not super familiar. But I think that is sort of a thing that gets underrated about Tom Petty, as you kind of briefly alluded to there. He did evolve a lot over the course of his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you sort of think of Tom Petty, and you get the idea of this guy who kind of stuck in his very, like, you know, heartland rock, maybe kind of power pop lane. But you look at, like, if you took... like one Tom Petty hit from every 5 years, you know, they all sound like Tom Petty, but they don't really sound anything like one another. You know, he dips into synth pop and new wave in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and he goes stripped down in the 90s, and then he goes kind of blues rock in the aughts, and it's a much more colorful palette than I think he probably gets credit for.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think you get a hint of that even on the debut. Do you, if you want to talk about that a little
sure,
bit?
Sure, yeah, so let's go into the debut.
Self-titled 1976 Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. The year 1976. No, I'm not going to do that. So this is the first one. And I think a lot of people, like if you look up the album cover art to Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, it's him kind of with this... it's a smirk. It's a very, I would say, a sardonic smirk.
Maybe, but it's very like they pretty him up a little bit for the cover, which was sort of surprising.
As pretty as Tom Petty's gonna
get. Yeah, sure, but no one's gonna confuse him from Leif Garrett or anything. But he definitely looks like at least they're trying to position him as some sort of like a rock star, which is sort of a thing that Tom Petty kind of resisted over the course of his career.
Right, this is true. But it's an iconic cover image. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very rock and roll. You look at the track listing, you listen to the album, you're like, oh man, he came out of the door or fully Tom Petty, fully dominating. It's got American Girl on, it's got Breakdown. And I think one thing that kind of gets forgotten historically is that first album didn't do that well. I mean, it wasn't exactly a flop, but neither American Girl or Breakdown were big hits at the time. They later re-released Breakdown and it did hit top 40. But they kind of like middling sales. Yeah. It just didn't connect. I think this was 76. It was, what people were listening to was either kind of classic rock excess, like really big bloated albums, or the people who were sick of that were getting into more, like punk new wave stuff. And, I think he kind of got lumped into that a little bit, but he's not really he's not punk or new wave. He's just a straightforward rock band.
It was interesting to me to do some reading today and find out that back in the mid 70s that Tom Petty was on like the bills with, they would be on bills with X or like other like LA punk type bands, and he'd be playing at CBGBs with the Talking Heads or whatever. Like it's crazy to think that he came from those kind of backgrounds. But as you said, like because he wasn't Pink Floyd and he wasn't King Crimson, and he wasn't Supertramp or whatever, that was the crowd that it made sense to kind of lump him in with. Mm-hmm. He never really had that kind of like righteous fury to him, at least not quite in the same way. He had his causes, but he wasn't rebelling.
Yeah, he wasn't really against everything.
Yeah, basically. He wasn't inherently anti-establishment, but he did have songs that were kind of lean, muscular, 2-minute, 3-minute rock songs. That first album is like 10 tracks in 30 minutes, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and eventually it went gold. Eventually it became a classic and all that stuff. But it's anyway. So it wasn't a big thing when it came out. He kind of 1979 was the year he really broke through with "Damn the Torpedoes." Which is another one of those ones where, like, you look at the track list and it's just, like, a massive, massive... It's got Refugee, Here Comes My Girl, Don't Do Me Like That.
Are those the first three songs? No.
Refugee and Here Comes My Girl are the first two songs, and then even The Losers is the first...
That's a top three right there. Wow.
I mean, yeah, opening an album with those are, like, three of the most famous classic rock songs of all time, really.
Yeah, those are
like,
up there.
If you've never sought out Tom Petty, you've probably heard these songs 20 times just by virtue of existing.
And it seems like this, like every kind of classic rock figure of Tom Petty's era had to have one album like this. Like, Billy Joel had The Stranger, Bruce Springsteen had Born to Run, and then this was his, like, not quite every track maybe, but like at least 5 or 6 tracks that just get constantly recirculated throughout FM rock radio for basically all of eternity.
Right.
And it actually was a commercial success in its own right, unlike the first couple. I think it peaked at number 2 for 7 weeks, but behind your favorite Pink Floyd album, The Wall.
Ugh, The Wall. Whatever.
But a contrast there, though, right?
Like, yeah, that is crazy to think about. But I mean, yeah. So what this album? What do you we were re-listening to some of the Petty. Like, what do you think about an album like "Damn the Torpedoes"? Like, do you think it stands as like one of the 70s greatest, or do you think, Tom Petty is kind of like best served with the greatest hits type thing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that. He's not really like a classic albums artist. He's not the kind, like, he's not going to make a version of The Wall, which is like, really intricate and like tracks bleeding into one another and large conceptual frameworks and stuff like that. He's not that kind of album artist, even compared to something like Born to Run, where it's like very much, paced kind of like scenes from a movie. That's not him. He just gives you the songs and, he paces them well, but the songs don't add up to much more than, the sum of their parts. But some of their parts on Damn the Torpedoes is just staggering. I mean, those three songs, Don't Do Me Like That is I think one of the greatest pop rock songs ever written. Just in terms of, like, just sheer economy, mm-hmm. You know, every phrase he uses doesn't have anything like any sort of unnecessary padding to it. The intro hits hard. It doesn't run on a second longer than necessary.
Yeah.
Fantastic chorus. Like you could teach an entire like class on that song. It's just textbook stuff.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's an under 3 minute song, and then Refugee is 3 minutes and 20 seconds. And Refugee to me just feels like an epic. Like if someone, mm-hmm. when you think of how short it is, 3 minutes 20 seconds, like that's almost unbelievable because it just seems to cover so much like sonic and emotional ground. Like from that opening like note, like that's just like the start of a movie. Like
yeah,
you know,
the organs are severe on that song.
Yeah, it's just incredible. But it's not overblown in any way. No. It's very, like you said, there's a lot of economy in storytelling and in craftsmanship. And yeah, something about his delivery, just that kind of like that wry, I don't know, wry iconoclastic humor,
yeah.
Where it's, you know, you get a lot of times you listen to it and you're like, I get where he's coming from. Other times you're like, maybe he's being a little, you know, a little too far off in his strange Tom Petty world and not really letting the rest of us in. But I think that's part of the kind of the beauty of someone like that,
yeah.
Is that sometimes what he does hits, other times it doesn't. But you're like, all right, he's just doing his thing no matter what.
Yeah, no, it always feels like Tom Petty. He doesn't really stray too far from the course there. Real quick, going back to American Girl. I had forgotten that's the last track on that album, on the first album.
Yeah, we did go through that too fast. No. Yeah, I mean that first album, right? I mean, ending an album with American Girl is just like.
But I wonder if that almost hurt like its commercial prospects at the time. Like that's to me that's like an ultimate opening track, especially because I think it's the first track on the Greatest Hits album.
Yes,
and like you on the first album, it gets like buried after a couple kind of the weirder songs in the album. They're like mm-hmm. a couple like reggae-ish, like almost dub experimental tracks towards the end.
Yeah,
and then it hits you, and by that time you've totally let your guard down, and it's tremendous. But I do wonder if it kind of hurt its commercial fortunes in real time that it wasn't, you know, just a lead track, first, you know, side one, track one, first album sort of thing. Could have been iconic pretty much from the get go.
That's probably pretty astute. I mean, I know like back in the 70s. You know, the way, I mean, yeah, that's how things were. I mean, people that was an album era, and mm-hmm. like the way albums kind of like, you know, carried in great part was word of mouth. And that was because people would put them on at parties or when you were, you know, with your friends or like smoking up or whatever. And like, you know, like people aren't going to stick through the whole album sometimes.
Yeah.
Like the first one is really what mattered. And that's why I would say most of these pop albums from the 70s, 80s, like usually they would front load with your hits. I mean,
yeah.
That totally makes sense. And I mean, yeah, American Girl is one of the all-time like achievements in like classic rock.
Oh yeah,
like, it's like this is just like classic rock as yeah. art. You know, and I think it's another one of those great examples, just like Born in the USA. Like, you just song title or like by barely listening to it, you're like, oh, this is like a song about America and patriotism. And then you actually listen to it, and it's like actually it's a pretty bleak.
Yeah, the second verse gets dark, and then that kind of funk breakdown comes out of nowhere in the middle, and then
yeah.
and then it doesn't give you that last chorus. It's always
doesn't give you the last
always
chorus.
What kills me about American Girl.
That but, like lightning fast finger picking just like careens off into nothing, and then the song ends. Which
it's like,
I
wait,
is,
come back!
Like, is an interesting like to end the album
yeah.
and the song that way. It's kind of a desperate sort of thing. So.
But yeah, as you mentioned, like yeah, this is one of those songs that just exists for all time. Like we had one of our co-writers, Chris Payne, recently just did a 12 best covers of American Girl list,
yeah.
and he probably left out 20 or 30 of them.
Right.
But, like, you know, Taylor Swift covered this song, for God's sake. Like,
that's funny.
It's about as well enduring as any song from its period, especially for one that wasn't even a hit in its lifetime.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's true. I always think of In Silence of the Lambs.
Sure.
The
poor Catherine Martin. Man.
Yeah. Singing along to this song and then getting beaten and
abducted.
Yeah, abducted.
Yeah.
But yeah, but aside from that, otherwise, great song. Yeah, anyway, so let's keep moving.
Let's get into the 80s here.
Let's get into the 80s. So his first Hard Promises, 1981. So that starts off with The Waiting and A Woman in Love, parentheses, It's Not Me. You know, what are your thoughts, I guess, on like The Waiting? And,
the Waiting's, yeah, I mean, that's a classic too. And that sort of is like, you know, if Refugee was kind of like the typical like blues rock kind of bar band Tom Petty song, this was his like ultimate jangle pop, mm-hmm. you know, Birds kind of rip off power pop song. And yeah, it's a really beautiful riff. It's actually a really kind of touching lyric. And it's too bad that like because of its chorus, it's kind of gotten reduced to like, you know, like just the song you play like in commercials when like you're trying to illustrate somebody right, waiting for something. Yeah. I wrote in my best songs piece, it's basically like fill in music for the Final Jeopardy theme when like you can't mm-hmm. afford the Final Jeopardy theme. And that's unfortunate, but it's a great song. And I think it's like first big hit of the MTV era too. And obviously he goes on to be like an iconic figure in the early years of MTV after that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that's if we want to just go into that. I mean, sure. Tom Petty is the kind of unlikely MTV hero, which Gil Kaufman, one of our wonderful writers, wrote a great piece about. Yeah, I mean, Tom Petty, you know, MTV, when it started out, obviously played music videos, as everyone knows and complains about still to this day.
Yeah. Won't be seeing any Tom Petty videos on TRL these days.
Probably not.
No.
But yeah, and most of those kind of fell into the, like, burgeoning new wave scene.
Sure.
You know, I think the first video they ever played was the Buggles' Video Killed the Radio Star. You know, Cyndi Lauper was an early staple, you know, Madonna.
Duran Duran,
exactly. Yeah. These people, very, like, new wave, synth pop, new romantic.
And very, like, image-focused people, too.
Super image-focused, very colorful videos, all kind of, I would say, maybe high concept's the wrong word, but, you know, I mean, and then Tom Petty kind of comes, and he's basically just, like, him looking weird, you know. Yeah. He's a very tall, gaunt-looking man, kind of staring into the camera, you know, unnervingly, and playing these classic rock songs. It was very against type for what MTV was favoring, and for that reason, I guess it worked. Or
yeah, well, I think he did a good job of playing along, but not playing along too much. You know, like he made some weird videos with high concepts, like the "You Got mm-hmm. Lucky" video is like a riff on Mad Max, and
such a good video,
yeah. And it has like a kind of a weird intro part, and mm-hmm. But that also was like one of his most MTV friendly songs because it has that really big synth riff,
right,
and,
exactly.
and a chorus, and that kind of matches it. But you know, he didn't do anything that felt inauthentic to him. Like it was still, you know, it was kind of winking. It was kind of wry and very much not like him pretending to be a UK new romantic. It was just Tom Petty showing up and like not wanting to ruin everybody else's good time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, him making videos on his own terms. And I think he had kind of a love-hate relationship with it, but he went along with it. And he not only survived into the 80s, but he basically thrived. I mean, this was as successful a period for him as he had in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, I mean, considering, yeah, he came out in 76 and didn't really break through until 78, 79. I mean, the 80s were definitely his biggest decade. And mm-hmm. this is a decade where, you know, aside from, like, sure, he had synths in some of his songs, but that was not his go-to instrument. This is a decade where he was an outsider, sonically, yeah. really. I mean, of course, there were other big rock acts in the 80s, but I think if you think of, like, someone like Dire Straits or even Springsteen, they maybe, I hate to use the word conform, but they fit in a little better with what was on the radio. Tom Petty was still very kind of like throwback favoring. I mean, this was a guy who was mining the sounds of the Birds, you know, yeah. in the 80s. And that was,
not
you know,
hip, no.
jangle folk rock was, I mean, sure, the Smiths were doing it, but like this was not a song that American...
Tom Petty and the Smiths just holding it down for
American,
the Janglers.
Exactly. That American radio was like favoring.
Yeah, and Bruce Springsteen, you know, he also had like tremendous success in the music video era, but he did so in like a very kind of self-serious sort of way. Like, you know, you would hire John Sayles to direct these kind of short independent films almost that were very, you know, serious, and you know, they had a lot to do with like his roots and kind of commenting on small town America and all that stuff. Tom Petty just showed up and like recreated Alice in Wonderland with like a big cake at the end that they ate, like mm-hmm. that was made of his leading lady. Like it's
right.
Like it's almost like an unfair comparison because you know, Tom Petty, like he leaned into what was really making MTV work at the time rather than making MTV come to him, which, you know, he didn't have the clout that somebody like Bruce Springsteen did to kind of force MTV to bend to his will. But that it ended up working for him because he came up with a couple of these videos that that became among the most iconic of its time. And I think Don't Come Around Here No More is probably the probably my personal favorite of them. Do you have a favorite of those Tom Petty videos?
I'd probably say Mary Jane's Last Stance. Okay. I mean, you know, digging up a corpse and dancing with it is.
Don't know if you can get away with that video today. I think there would be some think pieces about that one.
That's probably true. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's jumping ahead to the 90s. But, you know, that's just, that's the kind of thing that, like, leaves a very big impression on you as a kid.
So do you have a favorite of these kind of late 80s albums of his?
I mean, certainly like Full Moon Fever, sure. which we can hop into. But if we're talking just about the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers material, I mean, I don't. That's I would say like Southern Accents. I like that song a lot. Maybe the late 80s Petty albums with the Heartbreakers I'm not as into.
Yeah.
It kind of drops off in.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In terms of my interests a little bit, or at least that's the point where I'm like, I'm happy listening to the greatest hits version than like really returning to those albums a ton.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Our co-worker Frank DiGiacomo was preaching the gospel for Southern Accents earlier, so I do feel like I have to kind of give that one another chance. But
yeah.
I was digging into Let Me Up, I've Had Enough recently. I think that's the only album of his that doesn't, or at least from this period, that isn't represented on the greatest hits.
Yeah.
Probably for good reason. I mean,
right. That's kind of what I, and you know, again, I'm, like, this is not an album I know deeply, sure. but like from what I've listened to, I'm always kind of like, eh. Whatever.
Jamming Me is fun. It's a Bob Dylan co-write and has a cool, extremely like ahead of its time at the time video that's now like super dated where like kind of plays around with like a bunch of visual effects. But yeah, it's not surprising that he decided he had to go in a pretty drastic other direction for this last album of the 80s.
Right. I mean, yeah, Full Moon Fever, so his first solo album, produced by Jeff Lynne from ELO, you know, who he joined in the Traveling Wilburys just the year before. So I think their debut album came out in 88, and Full Moon Fever is 89. And this was, I mean, again, so, you know, like he started out in 76, not huge waves, then breaks through in major way with Damn the Torpedoes. He wasn't like struggling in the late 80s, but there was definitely like kind of, it seemed like a gradual slide.
Yeah, slightly fallow period, perhaps.
And, you know, even if Full Moon Fever, the album, didn't hit number one, even if Free Falling didn't hit number one on the Hot 100, I mean, these were just absolutely inescapable songs.
Sure.
And they were massive, and then they just persisted for years. I mean, really, you know, this is a period during which I was a kid and growing up, and I remember it being mid-90s, and you were still hearing Free Fallin' on normal pop radio as if this was a contemporary
sure.
pop song. And this is, you know, at that point, it's like a six-year-old song, and people are treating it as still just like, it's kind of like how Smooth was, you know, a decade later.
The
like,
Smooth of its era,
it was an
Fallin',
unkillable
yeah.
song
sure.
that you could just, you know, you would still hear on contemporary pop radio just absolutely years after it was no longer contemporary.
As well as within, you know, 5 miles of any like acoustic guitar store.
Without a doubt. Yeah, well, yeah, that's one of those opening riffs where you hear it and you're like, I could get a guitar and I could learn how to play that.
Yeah, like if you only know three chords, you probably still know how to play Free Fallin',
I think. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about that and then that whole
sure.
album. Like that's, for me, definitely my favorite Tom Petty album. And that's partially by virtue of just hearing it almost 100 times. I'm probably not even exaggerating, growing up from my parents. But it's also just, it's a beautiful album. You know,
sure.
this is where he takes his like pretty straightforward classic rock sound, but he strips it back a little bit more, throws in some of the birdsy Dylan jangle that he grew up loving. I think it's just a little more reflective. I think the pop melodies are a little stronger, but then there's really like just like vicious, maybe not a good word, but just like Take No Prisoners, Hard Rockers, like Running Down a Dream, sure. which is just one of the like sickest rock riffs.
You're So Bad's on this one too, right?
You're So Bad's on this one. I Won't Back Down, which is just a, you know, and again, what a great, like, that's one of those songs, like, incredible chorus, you know, so incredible that Sam Smith inadvertently
just
ripped
just
it off.
Just seeps in there, yeah. This,
years later.
Sam Smith's musical consciousness.
A great guitar riff, which is not, like, probably one of the best guitar riffs of his career. It's not even, like, the best part of the song, mm-hmm. you know, and this is a song where the verses are incredible too. So anyway, the album is Free Fallin', I Won't Back Down. Love Is a Long Road, that one's not so hot.
Don't call that one so
hot. Facing the Crowd, just a really beautiful song, incredible lyrics. And then Running Down a Dream, which is just a remarkable rocker, which just like keeps going and just like keeps getting harder and harder.
Yeah.
And then I'll Feel a Whole Lot Better, which is a Birds cover. So beautiful. And then yeah, You're So Bad, which
that's a run. I mean, going back to, sorry to belabor the Springsteen analogy, but if, you know, if Damn the Torpedoes was as Born to Run, then this was as Born in the USA, probably.
Yeah.
Like the kind of commercial blockbuster where everything sort of comes together, and he maybe, you know, maybe sands down some of his rough edges a little, you know, aerates with the production. Like it's definitely his most accessible album.
Mm-hmm,
or
for
certainly
sure.
of his big
yeah.
albums. And you know, yeah, you have a song like "Free Fallin'," which, you know, there's nobody in America who that song would alienate. You know, like,
right? Yeah.
At least the first 70 times you hear it. After that, maybe some
right,
people are
right.
dropping off a little bit. But yeah, beautiful songs, good mix of songs, great production from Jeff Lynne and Mike Campbell, who I always forget was probably more involved with the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers experience than we give him credit for. So,
100%.
So shout out to Mike Campbell, but. But yeah, this was kind of Tom Petty's moment. He had the success with the Traveling Wilburys. He had Full Moon Fever. He was owning MTV. He had mm-hmm. his biggest solo hit. Yeah, this was kind of the apex for him.
Right, and I think, you know, one thing we've been talking about him commercially and kind of also him as this, you know, just like paragon of middle of the road rock, which is true, but like he was also an artist. Like I don't want to like undersell
sure.
this. Like he was the kind of person who like very much valued art for the sake of art. Mm-hmm. His lyrics are really poetic and beautiful, but in kind of that, like, you know, like working class Springsteen-ish way, although I don't think their lyric similarities, I don't think their way of writing wasn't terribly similar, but I think kind of their lyrical preoccupations yeah. were. I mean, you know, Tom Petty came from a working class background. And, you know, that's what, like, a song like You're So Bad, which opens with My Sister Got Lucky, Married a Yuppie, Took Him for All He Was Worth, is just still, to me, one of the like, greatest opening lyrics in a rock song.
And, I mean, it
tells a full story in this right. very, very brief amount of time.
The main difference to me is that it always seemed like Bruce Springsteen was trying to comment. You know,
mm-hmm.
like he had an angle that he was shooting from when he kind of did his like little Tales from the Heartland and some
right.
suburban America. Tom Petty always seemed kind of neutral on that. Like he never seemed to be saying like, oh, I got to get out, or oh, you know, the Heartland is really where true America lies. He never really
yeah.
kind of messaged with his lyrics. He just kind of told stories,
mm-hmm.
And I think that probably, you know, that makes him less of a cult figure, but it also makes him more of an everyman and sort
yeah.
of a true everyman. Nobody says Ventura Boulevard like Tom Petty. Like he definitely owns
yeah.
the street of Ventura Boulevard
mm-hmm.
for the rest of his life.
That is true.
For the rest
yeah.
of his life at this point, but for the rest of all time, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only bad song on the album, Zombie Zoo, I think at the end.
Ooh, don't
just,
remember that one.
It's dumb. Listen to it. otherwise,
you know, I'm a fan of the one dumb song on an otherwise like unimpeachable blockbuster LP. Like that's fine by me.
Oh, totally.
Give
yeah,
me one.
That to me that doesn't like negate its classic
sure.
status. Like I always think of Kala, the MIA album, that way. Like just perfect, flawless album, and then that last song with Timbaland is just like
oh, I don't remember. I don't remember that one. But I'll take your word for it.
Anyways, so then yeah, so he returned to the Heartbreakers, made another album. And then 94 did another solo album with producer Rick Rubin, Wildflowers. Just really a gorgeous, like, stark, beautiful. I mean, that song is just, if you haven't heard it, it wasn't like a massive hit, but just the title track, Wildflowers, is so
yeah.
beautiful.
Well, it wasn't even a single, I don't think. But,
yeah, it wasn't a single. Yeah,
yeah
you're
but,
right.
But certainly it was still one of his probably best remembered songs, I would think.
Yes. I mean, I think Dixie Chicks sang it at one
point. Oh, wow,
really? I could be making this up. But there's been a lot of beautiful covers of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... Are you into The Wildflowers?
Yeah, I haven't listened to this one in a little while, but I'm definitely a fan, and I'm a big fan of You Don't Know How It Feels. The one shot video is a classic. Great chorus that he kind of, you know, baited censors with, you know, the let me get to the point, let's roll another joint. That's classic Tom Petty right there. Real quick, because we kind of glossed over Into the Great Wide Open.
We can return to that right now.
Certainly not like, yeah, not in a canonical Petty album probably, but it does have maybe my favorite Tom Petty song, that's Learning to Fly. The world gets still. I'm learning to fly. Bang got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing.
That's a really another beautiful, simple one.
Yeah, like it occurred to me, kind of, you know, listening to it, doing research for the top 20 list that I did, that a lot of its appeal is the same as what appeals to me about Peter Gabriel's Salisbury Hill. Mm-hmm. So this is a sort of, you know, naturalistic song. It's got, you know, the lyrics are slightly enigmatic, but also, you know, they kind of fit into a lot of different frameworks. Gorgeous production, beautiful riff, and just a chorus that like just soars forever. And like it's a melody that's like that fits into a lot of different like genres. Like mm-hmm. I've heard country covers of it, I've heard dance covers of it, obviously plenty of rock covers of it. And it's one of those songs that I don't think it wasn't really one of his biggest hits necessarily on the charts, but it's got a kind of timelessness to it. I think that's kind of the ones that's going to live on, you know, past his death for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. Learning to Fly is beautiful. The title track Into the Great Wide Open is another. Kind of one with those, like, you know, beautiful enigmatic lyrics where they're, you know, it's not totally obscure, but it's just enigmatic enough where you're like, oh, sure, I could read a million different things into this depending on where I am in life. And yeah, a great album. And then that actually reminds me too with that one and Full Moon Fever, you know, just kind of like his sense of humor he had during midway through the CD or the cassette versions. I can't remember either. But there's a part where he stops and says, like, all right, let's take a moment for those who are listening on vinyl, because this was when CDs would have been kind of the new thing. He's like, let's take a brief moment for those listening on vinyl to get up and switch their records over. And that would only have been available on the CD and or cassette versions, which I'd have to go back to because I don't quite remember. But, you know, there's so just like, prankster, he's cute. It's fun, a little prankster. But then, yeah, so let's, we'll I mean, I want to skip over the bit. So let's, what else we got in the 90s?
The hits kind of dry up after that. At that point, it's sort of fans only.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, there's fun tracks here and there. I like some of the songs off of She's the One, the soundtrack he did for what I'm sure was a perfectly mediocre Edward Burns movie with Jennifer Aniston. I really like, he does a cover of a Beck song called Asshole, which is kind of like, it's an interesting choice, and it's kind of an inspired cover. He finds kind of a middle ground between his style and Beck's that actually ends up kind of predicting the route that Beck would take himself on Mutations a couple years later. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. And there's some good singles off Echo. He says he can't really play that album anymore because it's apparently very connected to his divorce from his first wife. Hmm. But at this point, like, Tom Petty kind of exits the pop music sphere. Like, I don't think he has another top 40 hit after Wildflowers. And he doesn't have, like, another inescapable MTV song. And he kind of becomes a cult artist. But, you know, he's still... He still notches every album, hits the top 10 pretty much of the Billboard 200. He still sells out tours wherever he goes. For sure. He's still, you know, he still has a fan base and he doesn't lose any of it. But his days of a kind of a contemporary artist are sort of over. But we probably should. I think the last kind of essential Tom Petty release is that Greatest Hits album, which we've already talked about already. But like I don't think it can be stated enough just like what an essential LP this is. Like, you know, the sort of the Art of the Greatest Hits album's kind of lost to the Spotify era, and it makes sense, and I'm not going to really decry it too much, but you do miss out on, like, really formative Greatest Hits sets like this, where, like, you know, I could have met you for the first time today, and just by knowing that you're a music fan, I know I could talk to you about Tom Petty's Greatest Hits album, because it's just an album that everybody had, and that everybody's familiar with, and it kind of creates a canon, like, a separate from the canon of, you know, pop radio and even like classic rock radio. So, like, it creates a common language among Tom Petty fans where it's like, okay, maybe you and I can't go super deep on the Hard Promises deep cuts, but we all know these 16 or however many exactly tracks it is pretty well, and we always will.
Yes. No, I think that's, and it's also like, this is, you know, the CD era. So, like, Greatest Hits had the ability to kind of like retell an art, like almost like change history, basically, for an artist, you know. So, like, a song like American Girl, which, as you mentioned, opens the greatest hits, like, so incredibly, you know, which wasn't a big hit at the time, which remained a classic rock radio staple. For those of us who, like, kind of grew up with Tom Petty greatest hits, you know, then we think that this is, like, alpha, like, A-plus best Tom Petty.
For
like,
sure.
It starts to kind of change the story in terms of, like, what are the biggest hits and what we value the most.
And also, we should mention that Mary Jane's Last Dance, you know, your favorite Tom Petty video, certainly one of Red Hot Chili Peppers' favorite Tom Petty songs. It only appears on the greatest hits, and you know, most artists took the kind of requisite bonus track on the greatest hits. Is you know, you'd throw in a cover, which Tom Petty also does with his cover of Thunderclap Newman's "Something in the Air," or you just kind of phone in like a song that might have made a B-side otherwise. But this was one of Tom Petty's biggest hits, and this song is great. And you know, it kind of does it sees him doing like a Bob Dylan sing rap sort of thing, and it's got a nice riff to it. And there's some just beautiful moments in it, beautiful harmonies. It's just another Tom Petty classic.
Yes, it is. And in 1993, for a rock song that wasn't a grunge song to be that big and well-loved was kind of a coup. And I don't know. I guess personally, just kind of looking at those last few releases, when I say last few, I guess I really just mean like last 20 years.
We kind of et cetera the last couple of decades there, but it's inevitable.
I would say, you know, even like the last DJ was an album that did not get good reviews when it came out.
I had forgotten just what pans that got. Like on AllMusic, I think they gave it one star.
Yeah,
like
Rolling Stone, I think, and I could be remembering this incorrectly, but I'm pretty sure they trashed it too.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, and I'm not going to say it's a good album, but like the title track is good. Like it's, you listen to it, and you know, it's like really like if you value Tom Petty as a songwriter and storyteller and like his musical vibe, like it's a good song. Like there's really no reason to like tear into it the way people did.
I think the reason why that album maybe got kind of unfair reviews, and I agree with you that like there's some good songs on there, and also like some songs that don't really fit into the idea of what people have of the last DJ, is kind of this sort of angry sort of screed against the music industry. Second half of the album has some really lovely songs on it. But I think the reason why that album turned people off the way it did is because they sort of relied on Tom Petty to be sort of an even-keeled figure in their lives and to not really like get you know, indulge himself in these bouts of self-righteousness. And so you get songs like that song, you know, your personal theme song, Joe, which is like this very, you know, it's I would say it's not a particularly, you know, well-veiled, you know, screed against, you know, the record company figures in his life, and it's pretty thick with some of the metaphors and some of the you know, you can go look it up on lyric sites. You'll get more of an idea of what I'm talking about. But I mean, you get past that, it's you know, it's still Tom Petty. It's still a well-written album. It's still, you know, beautiful in spots. And I was reading some interview with him where he says that like he wishes people hadn't concentrated so much on the lyrics of that album, because he thinks that musically it's one of his strongest efforts.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's the lyrics, and that, you know, people always, I think very understandably, have a bit of backlash and discomfort when these, you know, rich, famous people make albums complaining about, you know, how difficult things are, like the industry and the media,
especially
like,
so late in their careers.
Exactly.
Too,
and I think especially, you know, it didn't help that this came out in 2002, which is just a year after 9/11, or not, you know, not even
more important things to worry about, Tom.
Well, and there's
who
also
cares
an
about
element,
your radio
like,
spins,
like, you know, like Springsteen was smart to come back with The Rising, which is a very,
I did not think about that. That's,
you know, like an album that is very sonically reassuring, that lyrically reassures us and is hopeful for the future. And then, you know, after like something like that, people turn to a classic rock figure for some sense of nostalgia. Sure. And Tom Petty is focused on complaining about the music industry. So I see why. Yeah, I see. I think that really fueled a lot of those negative reviews. That being said, though, I agree with Mr. Petty. I think it is a strong album.
Yeah,
I think
no.
It gets too much shit. But then, yeah, I mean, you look through the, like, Mojo came out in 2010, Hypnotic Eye in 2014. I mean, these are
his only Billboard number one album.
Hypnotic Eye is his only Billboard number one. I mean, these are not albums where listen, if you're not a fan, like, don't listen to it. But, like, probably it not. Is worth listening to. They're not bad albums.
No, yeah, I actually really like – I was re-listening to Hypnotic Eye today. That's a really strong album, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's got a kind of a vitality to it that might have been missing on a couple of his other 21st century albums.
Yeah.
You know, and you read, like, the Billboard cover story they did around the time, and everyone's saying, oh, yeah, he sounds like he did in his first two albums. Maybe a little strong.
Right, it's, yeah.
But close enough. Like, we'll give it to him.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and then obviously he recently passed, and that is very sad. But I guess what was the first, when you heard about the news, what was the first one that you went to?
Oh, it's hard for me to say, because, you know, well, actually, the first, like immediately after he died is when the TRL reboot started. And so I had to kind of put aside my grieving process for an hour as I watched that, which was sort of an interesting process. But I mean, you know, sometimes when an artist like this dies, you get time to kind of digest in your own right, and sometimes you just have to dive right in. So this was one of those times I just had to dive right in. If I had to go to one song first, probably would have been Learning to Fly. Either that or Don't Do Me Like That would probably be like the two songs that I would lean to first as the things that represent what I love about Tom Petty the most.
Yeah.
American Girl, Free Fallin', obviously, are the songs that he'll be best remembered for forever, and that's totally fine. But those are the songs that I have a little bit more personal connection to. What about you, Joe? What did you go for?
You know, I would say, like, my mind went to Break Down in Wildflowers, okay. But what I did was listen to the first album. And this is sort of an anticlimactic way of putting it, but the first song on the first album was Rockin' Around, parentheses, With You, which is kind of a goofy, slight, not super classic song. So it definitely was one of those things, like, I'm so sad about this, and then kind of go to listen to this kind of, like, dinky, like, rock song. It was kind of like, nah.
Well, that kind of helps a little bit. It, you know, keeps you from dwelling too much.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, this was a guy. He had his flaws, and he had his strong points and weak points. And,
yes. But you know, before we wrap this up, returning to that album, there are, you know, like, The Wild One Forever is a great song. Anything that's rock and roll is a great one. There's some really... he's an incredible, like,
he's got the songs.
Worksman, you know, just real, somewhere between worksman and artisan, I think.
And real quick, just because there was no kind of natural point to touch on this, great work as an outside songwriter, too. Talk about, you know, this Stevie Nicks's Stop Dragging My Heart Around.
Which is the biggest hit, which we did not touch on.
Which was really a Tom Petty and the Heartbreaker song that Jimmy Iovine kind of convinced him to give to Stevie Nicks because he thought that her album, which had Edge of 17 on it, was lacking a big first single.
Yeah.
And that's a great song. There's another song called Never Be You, which he wrote that he gave to Maria McKee for the Streets of Fire soundtrack. Mm-hmm. It's a very random, overblown 80s soundtrack. It was a beautiful, beautiful song and a number one hit eventually for Roseanne Cash on The Country Starts when she covered it. You Got It by Roy Orbison, which was a fantastic song.
Yeah, I'm glad we touched on that. Yeah,
his last really big solo,
the Black and Blue album, I believe.
Sure.
Yeah,
but another Petty co-write, and he had a couple like those throughout his career. Another one for Lone Justice, and you know, it just kind of showed that, like, at his heart, this guy was a songwriter.
Yes,
and you know, he was great at performing his own songs, but he was also perfect at letting go, and you know, the songs are so strong that they kind of stand on their own outside of his own performance, and they could have worked for any number of artists, really.
Right. It actually reminds me, I guess the last thing he did, there might be a posthumous album or something, but and we premiered it recently, was Chris Hillman of the Byrds has a new solo album, his first in ever or a really long time. I don't fully remember.
I couldn't tell you.
But yeah, Tom Petty produced it and basically, like, half forced him to make this album and was pretty, like, involved in the process. So he was a very generous person in terms of, like, giving songs and expertise to, you know, like a Roy Orbison or a Chris Hillman, who, you know, at various points throughout, you know, in the late 80s or now, like, you know, 2017, aren't as popular as Tom Petty is. And, you know, he was generous enough to kind of use some of his star power to be like, hey, people, remember that there's other people who were,
you know, who made
me who I was.
And that's kind of beautiful. Like, it's a sort of a beautiful note for his career to end on. I mean, you know, they say that there's a story, and maybe it's apocryphal, I don't know, but that the first time Roger McGuinn of the Byrds heard American Girl, he said to Tom Petty, oh, that's funny, I don't remember writing that one. He just assumed that it was an old Byrds song that he was covering because, you know, it sounds so Byrdsy with the kind of jangling intro and the chorus and so forth. And that's sort of, I don't know if it's Tom Petty's ultimate legacy, but I think one of them is just kind of keeping the rock and roll flame burning. Like, you know, he did he experimented throughout his career with different kind of forms of rock and roll. You know, it was a power pop, blues rock, new wave. But he always stayed very true to his rock center. And he's one of those figures that, like, he'll just represent rock and roll forever.
Right.
Like, you know, he might not have been kind of the most influential rock star. He certainly wasn't one of the first rock stars. Probably wasn't one of the most popular rock stars. But you think of Tom Petty, you think of rock and roll, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and he did a good job of both keeping that flame alive for the generation before him and passing it on to the generation after him. And so many other artists have kind of, you know, consciously or unconsciously stolen from him over the years. We talked mm-hmm. about Red Chili Peppers, Sam Smith, The Strokes. Yep. Japan Droids. I mean, mm-hmm. like these artists were just little fragments of Tom Petty classics kind of seep their way in, and you don't even know if it's intentional or not because it doesn't really matter because he's just part of the rock and roll language at this point.
Yeah. I think that's a beautiful place to end it on.
All right.
So let's do it. Well, thanks for joining me, Andrew. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on, Joe.
And paying homage to Tom. And and thank you for listening. I guess my recommendation, if you're not super familiar, I would say listen to Full Moon Fever start to finish, and then maybe head back to Damn the Torpedoes, and then maybe Wildflowers. And I guess for you, you know, what are your?
Oh, I think those three, and you fill in the greatest hits from there. And if you really feel like digging more, there's plenty more to be found. But I think those are the essentials.
All right, lovely. All right, thank you for listening, and we love you, Tom.
You belong among the wildflowers.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.